Here, if I switch on now, and I can switch it off whenever you want to. What I wanted to ask you about first was, it seemed to me you've got an awful lot into your life. You've crammed a lot in,
yes,
you've done a lot.
Yes, it's true.
And one explanation as to how you've been able to do that is that you seem to be very well organized. That is, you have sort of lists of things and gadgets and so on.
Oh yes, it's a family joke.
Yes. Where does that come from, Mrs. Frankenberg? Is it your mother's, your parents' advice to you?
I think it's my father, probably.
Hmm. And did they sort of tell you when you were young that you must organise yourself, you know?
Yes, he was very particular about whether you were being accurate and so on.
Hmm. I mean, sort of writing jobs down that you had to do and that sort of thing.
Well, that's always been, as I say, a family joke. Money-making lists. But on the other hand, they do come to me when they want information about anything.
Yes, yes.
I've generally got a note of it. I've got very detailed diaries.
Yes. Do you remember this going right the way back into your childhood? I mean,
oh, yes.
The system and order and all
I've
that.
I've got rough diaries. My first diary was given me when I was 10. And I started writing in it then, and then I resumed again in my teens. And I've got detailed letters that my parents kept that I wrote from Oxford. They're all the help.
Mm. Are you a hoarder? I mean, do you keep things?
To a certain extent, but I love getting rid of things. I used to put them outside my bedroom door. It used to be called Carice's Little Heaps. I couldn't bear them. Once I got rid of them, I wanted them to go. I do like getting rid of things.
But when you keep things, you know where they are, is that right?
I used to. I've taken now to putting them in very safe places and then having a hell of a time looking for them. But now I very often write down where I put them. I put my keys away in a beautiful secret place. I couldn't think where I'd put them. After that, I started writing them down.
But also your gadgets, you see. I mean, that's part of your orderliness,
oh, yes,
isn't it?
That's another joke.
Yes, I mean, why is that, really? Is it to save time, would you say, or what? Why are you keen on gadgets?
I think it's because I never trusted my memory. My father told me once that I'd killed any memory I'd got because I always wrote things down. And now, of course, my memory's hopeless. I can't remember anything.
Yes, I tend to do that sort of thing myself. Your father seems to have been quite an important influence on you, really. I mean, more than your mother, would you say?
Well, in different departments, really.
Mm.
My father with writing and public speaking, and I've got his habit of organising and things. Mother was a very literary person. She wrote and collected anthologies and published several anthologies of poetry and prose and so on.
So you combine the two?
I do, right? Yes.
Yes, yes. Yes, but I wondered about, you see, it seems to me that another reason why you've done a lot in your life is, and are doing a lot in your life, and you haven't done it yet, is that you've got a strong sort of public sense of obligation in a way, a sort of feeling of public obligation.
Oh, yes.
You see what I mean?
Yes, I would write a letter to a paper, or I'd write a letter to a public person.
Mm.
I wrote, this is confidential, I wrote to Margaret Thatcher long before she became president and advised her not to use the word I so often in her speeches.
Really? Mm.
And I had a nice letter from her secretary thanking me. I said, why don't you say we instead of I?
Mm. That's part of your tendency to do things, to be active, is it?
Somebody's got to do it, and if nobody else is doing it, I've got to.
Hmm. Hmm. Was that your father's attitude as well, do you think?
I think so. He used to write to the papers, and yes, I think he did rather plunge in if he saw something he wanted doing.
Mm. Mm. And that applies within the family as well. I mean, you're the doer in the family, are you? Or you were?
I was, certainly, yes, at one time.
Mm.
Yes, my husband was rather easygoing, awfully good, and did lots of things with ex-servicemen and so on, but I was more the one who wrote to the paper about something.
And actually took action.
Yes, he encouraged me in every possible way.
Oh yes, that's very clear from your autobiography.
Yes, well, I think, I don't know whether I said it in my book, that my mother said that he took his wife to more peculiar places at more peculiar times than anybody she'd ever heard of. He was always driving me to funny little outskirts of Manchester where I was booked to give a talk or something.
Yes.
He was awfully good about it.
He seems a rather remarkable man, your husband, really. I mean, where does he get a lot of his rather enlightened ideas from? Does it come from his Jewish background, or what?
I should think a great deal, yes, because his father was a self-made man. He came to England with nothing at all as a Jewish or a Russian refugee and built up a very big business.
So there's a sort of energy in the
family. There is strong energy in the family, yes.
But then, why don't you think he went to seed? I mean, the second generation, or, you know, the clogs to clogs sort of argument. He wasn't a spender or a irresponsible, was he, your husband? I mean, he was carrying on the energy of his father.
Well, he was very energetic with ex-servicemen.
Mm. Mm.
He did a lot with, he founded the, well, there is a Sydney Frankman branch of the British Legion.
Yes, yes.
Which was founded by my husband.
Yes. I wonder what kept him going. You see, I mean, his father was obviously accumulated quite a lot of money through his effort. Do you think your husband might
yes,
have just
he
spent
was
it?
Yes, he was the mayor of Salford three times, I think, his father. He was very well known.
Mm. I wonder why he kept going, so to speak, rather than just sitting back and spending it all.
Well, I don't know. He hadn't got an unlimited amount to spend. I mean, we were quite comfortably off, but not terrifically. Every now and then he used to tell me I'd got to economise. I think I put in the book I was under one of these economy efforts. And I looked out of the window and saw a dozen men digging at the bottom of the garden.
They're trying to put in a swimming pool or something.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And then I said, well, can I stop economising? And he said, yes.
But it's unusual, you see, for somebody, at least it seems to me, it's a bit unusual for somebody brought up in the Jewish world, generally, to be so liberal in his attitude to his wife, to her position and her public role and so on. Where do those ideas come from?
Well, we were second cousins, you know.
Yes.
There's a good deal of the same family in us.
Yes. Yes, so that helped, you think?
I think so, yes.
But was he a liberal Jew in his attitudes, really, or...?
Not in his politics. He was a conservative in his politics.
Yes, yes.
Yes, he was, I think. He was very tolerant of all sorts of people.
Because, as I understand it, you know more about this than I do, but as I understand it, women are very much kept in a separate compartment in the Jewish world.
Not in his personal life, certainly.
Yes, yes.
He never tried to keep me down.
No, quite. I wondered, you know, where he got that rather enlightened attitude from. I mean,
father wasn't at all bigoted.
Hmm.
I heard, years after he died, after her husband died, as a matter of fact, that he had been heard to say to somebody, I shouldn't mind if Sydney married that Barnett girl, that was me.
Mm.
A second cousin once removed or something. I used to go and stay there a lot.
Did you? Yes.
With his family.
Yes.
And he said he wanted to marry me ever since I was seven. Did I say the first thing I remember about him?
You certainly said you remembered him very early on.
When I was seven, hauling me off the billiard table where I was playing ships with his cousin. with his sister. He was very cross. He was 11 years older than I was, so what was there, 7? But he was 18. I thought he was very nasty and disagreeable. Don't see why we were having a lovely game of ships scuttling about with our heels on them.
One thing I wanted to ask you was about Manchester Jews, really. Did you move among Jews in Manchester a lot, or did you, move much more widely?
Well, we moved much more widely. I used to go to Jewish things with him, Jewish Lads Club, Lads Brigade, and things he was president of.
Because there's quite a big Jewish community in Manchester.
Oh,
there was, wasn't there?
Oh, yes, in Salford, you see. His father was mayor of Salford 3 times. So, but they never bothered, they never interfered with me, they were always perfectly friendly. We went to them. There was a very funny incident once, I don't think, I may have told you, but I went, we went, he and I, to some boy, Jewish boys' club or something, and we took Ursula, my daughter, who was about 7 or 8, I think, that. And they gave her an enormous box of chocolates and said they were gold chocolates or something. And they said, what would you do if it was real gold? And she said, I should sell them. And I remember one of the men saying delightedly, she shows her race.
I've got the impression, you see, that Manchester and Salford, in the 20s and 30s, when your husband was based there, his factory was there, was an exciting place, actually. I mean, there was a lot going on, a lot of meetings, a lot of movements, a lot of public activity. And that's the period of the Simons, isn't it, of course? And the idea that what Manchester does today, the world does tomorrow, was still very much the attitude. Do you feel that, looking back? I mean,
yes, I think we were rather ahead, but I think what Salford did today, Manchester did tomorrow, of course, because I'm very proud of Salford.
Yes.
And I remember when I first was asked to do something in public life, soon after we were married, I was thinking of opening first birth control clinic, and I asked my husband about it, and he said, yes, but I think it would be nice if you asked my mother, because Frankenberg is a Salford name. And I said, oh yes, because you see, his father had been mayor 3 times. So I asked my mother-in-law if she would have any objection. She's very sweet, she said, my dear, you made your own name, you do what you like. No, I have no objection at all. So I went ahead.
Yes. But I have the feeling there are lots of sort of intellectual groups and movements and lively sort of activity going on there. I mean, because you've come down to the south since, so you must know. Do you notice a contrast with that at all, really? I mean,
well, I've never sort of gone in really much to the, except through National Council of Women and that sort of thing down here. I've done that a lot.
Yes.
But I don't know, it just seemed to come. People asked me to do things and I did them, and then one thing led to another.
Yes. I sort of have the feeling now that Manchester's quite a depressed sort of place by comparison to what it was.
Well, I don't think they do. They're not nearly as interesting as they were. There were an awful lot going on. I remember going. I was very much exercised at one time because the Liberals were running everything, you see, and I'm a Conservative. And I got an opportunity at one big woman's meeting, I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was a Conservative meeting. And I had to speak about something, and I said, I've been working in Salford and Manchester for over 10 years then. I said, and I only know one of you by sight, and this was the Conservatives. I've been on any number of public bodies, and you are the, I only know one of you by sight. I was very angry with them. I think that did stimulate them a bit, and one or two joined.
Yes, your point was that unless Conservatives join these movements,
the Liberals would have a lot. They used to complain, you see, that the Liberals are running this and the Liberals are running that. And the working woman's thing I was on was a conservative one in Moss Side, and they were grumbling about it, about it being all. And I said, yes, I know, there are Liberals running everything. And I said, how many of you belong to the co-op for shopping? And they all belonged, you see. Hands up. And I said, now, hands up, those of you who are on the committee of the co-ops. None. Well, I said, you complain the Liberals are running, it's because you won't join. And then when I went to the more aristocratic meeting of the Conservatives, I remember saying the same thing. I said, there's only two of you I know by sight. Conservatives.
Mm.
They just didn't join, I don't know. They were just lazy.
Mm. So the Liberals and the Labour later
Liberals ran the whole thing, everything in Manchester.
Mm. Yes, that's interesting. I sometimes wonder, though, see, why you're a Conservative at all. Because you've promoted so many progressive things, like birth control, for instance, or infant welfare, and you're very keen on education. You're a doer, you're an activist, and so on. I would have thought you'd naturally go to the Liberal Party, and then when the Liberal Party faded out, you'd become a Labour activist, like Mary Scott.
They're politics, the Liberals.
But why, you see, I mean...
Well, because they always said, like the Manchester Guardian, whatever happened, it was always England that was wrong. That was my chief grumble about the Liberals. No, the Liberals were right, and it was always the Conservatives that were wrong. They were always saying the English were wrong.
Yes.
Whenever there was an international... Now I've got it straight.
Yes.
There was an international, the Liberals always seemed to back the foreigners.
Yes.
And say it was the Conservatives who were wrong, and that just got my goat.
You're a patriotic person.
Yes. Yes.
That's interesting. So really, it's foreign affairs, in a way, that makes you a Conservative, rather than domestic things.
No, it's both, I think. I think it's a bit of both. Both, because I'm just the same with the... I'm not my country right or wrong, but I would always give the English the benefit of the doubt.
Mm.
And the Liberals always seem to me to start off with the English are bound to be wrong.
Mm.
We're always so generous-minded, we always back the other people.
Yes.
I hated that.
So how far does your conservatism go back? I mean, is it from the very beginning, really, as soon as you became aware of politics?
Oh yes, I suppose just I took it for granted to begin with, because my parents were all Conservatives. And I've never seen any reason for changing it.
Mm. Were they keen Conservatives, I mean?
Oh yes, and they weren't active. They didn't take any part or anything except to vote for Conservatives, and I knew they were.
Mm. So, yes, that does explain things, but all the same, you're keen for the Conservative Party to be a reforming, progressive party, aren't you? You're rather like Lady Astor in that, aren't you? I mean,
yes, I sympathise with her a good deal.
Mm. I mean, you're not just a person who resists change.
No, I don't think so. No.
I mean, you're quite keen on change.
Yes.
So long as it's done by the Conservative Party, really.
Well, so long as it's done on the lines I like.
Yes, yes.
I'm not keen on change just for the sake of it, if everything's right.
No. I'm just trying to see, you see, in many ways it's not surprising that you didn't find many Conservatives in the causes you joined, because so many of these causes are really liberal causes. I mean,
certainly they were.
Yeah.
And the Conservatives were just bone idle, they were just lazy, they wouldn't join in anything.
Yes, yes.
They always left it to everybody else and then grumbled.
Yes.
Which I thought was silly.
Yes. Yes. Getting back to your mother, you say she was a literary woman, she wrote a lot and so on, but was she an important influence on you in being active for women's causes, do you think?
No, she wasn't particularly active for women's causes. I don't remember much about her on those lines. I don't think she belonged to any women's associations, as women's associations. I'm sure she didn't, I suppose.
So you weren't influenced in that way by her?
No, I don't think I was.
But you were influenced to write by her example, you think?
And my father, of course. They both wrote a lot, and my uncle wrote a lot. There was quite a lot of it in the family.
Yes, yes. So it's a natural thing to fly to pen and paper.
Oh yes, I think I got my first I published in a competition, I think. I began winning. I know I was disgusted about this. I think I put it in my book. That my parents made me stop taking in little folks and gave me sixpence a week instead. And I found afterwards it was because I used to call up in a bored voice in the morning, another gold medal mine. She thought I was getting them too easily and it was bad for me. I was very cross. I liked getting them, but...
So you're quite an activist, even as a young woman, really.
Yes.
I mean, you sort of
got energy. Yes, I was. I was doing things.
Now, is that because you were breastfed or because you weren't breastfed? I mean...
I think I was breastfed for 3 months.
I mean, I wondered, you know, whether you... know where this comes from. I'm sure you've got views about where.
Well, I've got views about that. Not my eldest boy, because when he was born I was in very bad health and very run down. I couldn't manage it. But all the others were breastfed for 9 months. It is one of the things I'm very, very keen on. I did a lot about.
But your energy comes from somewhere, you don't quite know where, but probably from both your parents.
I don't know, but Mother was very energetic in a literary way, you see. She did a lot of anthologies, and my father was, of course. He was very active.
Did they encourage you to...
Oh, yes.
...to be active?
Oh, yes, definitely.
What, no sitting around, no boredom, no...
Well, I never remember being bored, no.
No.
I remember when I went out to tea, the other children always grumbled because I had my nose in the book, because I went for all the silly children's books, you know, girls' school stories and things that weren't allowed in our house. Wasn't allowed any silly stories. I loved them, of course.
Really? Why was that, Mrs. Frankenberg?
Well, I think they wanted to cultivate a decent literary style, which, of course, I think they did. They had helped a lot, and to give me a good, valuable books with a good literary standard to read, it does, I suppose, help to form your style.
What, like sort of Dickens and the great novelists?
All those things, yes.
Were they do you feel they were a sort of serious family? I mean...
We were what?
Were your parents serious parents, or rather serious and
Oh,
earnest?
Very good sense of humour, both
they?
Of them.
Really?
Oh, thank goodness, yes.
Because, I mean, it sounds from what you say as though they're, you know, trying to make you into a sort of serious young woman.
Oh, no.
You know?
I always remember, I don't know what book it was, but my mother used to quote it. If we did seem a bit stupid about something, she used to say, I don't mind you being naughty, I can whack you for that, but I won't have you stupid. You used to get mad if I was stupid.
Really?
And didn't understand anything. Yet. I don't mean she was unkind about it, but she was awfully impatient. You had to be on the spot.
So do you remember having lots of talks and arguments and conversation in the family? I mean, Oh, with yes. Your parents?
Oh, yes, we used to talk quite a lot at mealtimes, I do know. Mm. I remember that. Mm. Talk and argue and discuss things. It was very interesting, and of course my brother was too. I'd have long discussions with him.
Mm. Looking back, do you think you were strictly brought up?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Oh, yes, I do. And I remember a girl saying to me at school once, I suppose I said something about my father wanted this or that. She said, it's funny, your family, isn't it? And I said, why? And she said, well, most families, it's your mother who decides things about, you know, clothes and that sort. It seems to be your father. So I said, I just hadn't thought of it, but I suppose it is. You know, he was very strict about, well, sensible shoes, which I loathed at the time, but of course I'm very grateful ever since. You know,
to make your feet
no,
grow properly.
Yes, no pointed toes and no high heels.
Mm.
In fact, I've got one friend who remembers I used to go to her and say, Nora, can you lend me some shoes? I'm going out with a boy. She's still a great friend.
What about sort of discipline? Were you beaten or locked up?
I remember one or two spankings, but not very much, no.
Mm. On the whole, you wanted to do what they wanted you to do?
Yes, I think they began the way I advocate. You begin as you want to go on.
Mm.
You start from the beginning.
Mm.
Then you don't have to. I mean, I never had to spank any of my children.
Mm.
I don't mean they were always good, because they weren't, but you did sensible things with them.
Yes.
Either you stopped their chocolate or something.
Yes, or you make it clear what the situation
was. Oh yes, it was always very clear what they might do and what yes. they might not.
Yes, and then they've got a framework to live in.
Oh yes.
Hmm. Hmm. Yes.
They seem quite satisfied with it. Mm. I was very proud one day, not very long ago. My boy, actually, it was the one who died. He said, well, Mum, one thing you certainly did, you did make us think of other people,
mm.
which I thought was very valuable,
mm.
because they do get on with other people.
Mm. Mm.
I think because I get on quite easily, it's because I was brought up. Well, think how it would appear if you were them before you do anything, my mother used to say. Think what it would seem like if you were the receiving end before you do it. It's very valuable, I think.
Mm.
Funny resident here said to me once in a rather surprised voice, people do seem to like you, don't they? So I said to I think it is because my mother made me think, always think, how is it going to appear to that person? Management of servants and that sort of thing, she was frightfully particular.
Thunderstorm.
Is that thunder?
Mm.
Gracious me.
Did she do a lot of good works, your mother? I mean,
not outside work, no. She did literary, you know, writing anthologies, but she didn't belong to any women's societies or anything like that.
What about charities? Things like that, social work?
No, she didn't do any social work.
Mm.
I think they contributed a certain amount to charities, but, you know, with money and so on.
Mm.
But she didn't belong to any do-good societies. The ones I got caught up in a lot, you see, as soon as I was married.
Mm.
I did some... I joined my old school, started just before I left. Society and Stepney Welfare Society, and I joined that at once and it started off that way. Yes, but when I think of it, nobody thought anything of me at the age of 15 and 16 going alone to Salford at night on the underground.
Yeah, to Stepney.
And doing work in Salford then. You
yes.
couldn't let a girl do that now.
No, I didn't.
At least
couldn't.
I shouldn't.
No. No.
But I used to walk about at Salford at night.
Did you really?
Yes. I think we used to go two together. Well, when I was about 17 and 18, we used to go and help in girls' clubs in Salford.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that, Mrs. Frankenberg. I mean, you did quite a lot of social work, really, before you ever became a nurse, didn't you?
Yes.
What, you didn't say very much in your...
I wasn't a nurse soon, I was a midwife.
Your midwife, yes. You didn't say very much in your book about what sort of work you'd done in that line before you became a midwife.
Well, it was a girls' club in Salford. I think that's about all I did.
In Salford?
Stepney.
Yes.
And visiting.
Yes.
Visiting from a health centre. It was a very new thing then, a health centre. And it was considered rather odd, I think. All girls weren't allowed to do it, but I was.
What did you have to do? What was health visiting, really?
It was visiting. I mean, if a child was supposed to be taken to hospital, you'd go to her parents. And first you'd tell her what she had to do, and then if she didn't go, you'd go and see her. I always remember going to see a woman whose child was supposed to go and have her teeth done. She was very firm with me. She said, "I won't have him put under no agony." I always remember that phrase. I also remember another episode of the girls' club that always struck me as very funny. It was a children's club. One child said, "Oh, miss," to me, "look," and she pointed to an enormous puddle on the floor, and she said, "Someone's left the room." It was obviously what someone had failed to do.
Who organised this health visiting then, Mrs.
My Frenchman? School.
Oh, I see, it was the school...
We were called to a consultation with the High Mistress. I can't remember if it was the term before I left or the term after, but it was just about then. And she wanted to, they wanted to found a social club, our High Mistress, and she called us, the leavers, the top form together, and said, "Would we help and would we be allowed to?" We had to ask our parents. I didn't make any bones about it at all. I very much doubt if I should have nowadays let my daughter go alone at night to Salford.
So your interest, Stepney, yes, your interest in health and that sort of thing and children and so on, that starts there then, does it really?
It really does, but I've always been interested in very small babies because I had an awful row with my father over that. Something he said to me. This may be in the book, I don't remember. Something he said to me about... he wanted me to take some course. Before I left school. Wanted me to take some training course in teaching, I think it was.
Yes.
And he said, I don't want to do it. And he said, "But it will be a great help to you when you apply for a post as a headmistress." And I said, "I am not going to apply for a post as a headmistress. I don't want to teach." And then he said, "Oh, don't want to teach. I take no further interest in you." And he didn't. And for about a year or two, if somebody asked him, "Is it term or vacation? Is Caris at Oxford or at home?" And he said, "I haven't the faintest idea."
Oh, no.
And that lasted. He was quite amiable to me, but took no interest in my career because he said, "Oh, I wasn't going to teach." He was no interest. And my mother, I remember, backed me up and she said, "She's always said she wouldn't teach. She's always said she disliked the idea. She's always said she was going to do something with small babies," and I had. And he just didn't want to hear it, so he hadn't heard it. Because he'd got it stuck in his mind that I was going to teach.
That sounds rather surprisingly intolerant, really, of him. I mean, was he like that on a lot of things, or was that...
Well, yes, he used to have certain things that you didn't tell him you did, and certain things you didn't discuss when he was there. But my mother protected us very well.
Because, of course, education was his life. wasn't it? I mean, so you can understand his...
Oh, yes, he was chief inspector of training colleges, and then he was legal, he was an education advisor to the Prime Minister.
Yes.
He was quite high up.
So one can understand, but all the same, with your own daughter, you ought to let her make her own decision.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yes.
She always said she wanted to deal with horses. And so she went straight into an agricultural college training.
Yes.
She's been interested in horses ever since.
So then you'd had a bit of social work then with the Stepney Club. What went on in the clubs? I mean, were they... What sort of things happened there?
I can't remember. I think we used to play games and I think perhaps we used to read to them all. We certainly visited them.
Once a week or how often?
I should think it was probably once a week. But my great friend from school and I used to go down together and visit them. Oh, and we used to be given the names and they ought to have gone to hospital, and if hadn't they gone, why hadn't they? And if they didn't want to, try and persuade them. That sort of thing. That was the work we did.
But it seemed to me, you see, I mean, this will show you how things have changed. I'd feel very embarrassed going round to houses and suggesting what they should do with their children. Didn't they mind?
No. Oh, one or two who did, yes. But most of them, you had to be tactful, of course. They'd ask you in and you'd talk and you'd tell them what you thought. And
It's a good introduction to social work, generally.
It was a very good introduction. You had to learn to be very tactful and to put things very carefully. And not to be patronising.
The school actually encouraged you to join.
Yes, they started it.
Do this.
The High Mistress called us together just before we left and said she was hoping to set up a social thing. It was a pretty new school anyhow, you see. The boys' school pinched all our money. It was supposed to be for both boys and girls. For hundreds of years the boys had it. I don't know how long. The boys had it and we got it back. I don't know how we did it.
Yes.
That so, set of governors, I suppose, let us have it.
So then you went to Somerville. Did you have any social work there? I mean, did they encourage that sort of thing?
No, I don't think so. We were too busy. There were too many other things to do.
Yes, yes. I wonder whether they had a social club in London or a sort of social...
Yes, I think they did. But I think it was just after my time, I think.
Yes, you weren't involved.
I wasn't involved in that.
Yes.
I went to the university. The university women had a settlement somewhere, and I went to that for a bit. Not for very long. Well, the war came, you see, in the middle. I hadn't finished Oxford when the war came.
Then the war reinforces your patriotism, does it?
Oh, yes. That was straight... Well, my brother enlisted straight away, you see. And I didn't feel I could possibly go on at Oxford. I didn't expect him to come up. So I had the exhibition from school. I got them to put it off, and I got the Somerville people to put me off, too.
Like Vera Brittain.
Yes, so don't talk to me about that.
But I didn't really understand, you see, from your autobiography, why you got a midwife's qualification. I mean, surely you ought to have got a nurse's qualification.
No. Well, what happened was, I knew I wanted to go to France after my brother was killed. I wanted to get away. And I went to the Friends, Quakers, War Victims Relief Organization, and I said, I want to go to France and do some work. So they said, what are your interests? And I said, well, my French is very good, and I'm very fond of small babies. And they said, go and train as a midwife, just like that. So they said, go and see Dr. McCall at Clapham. So I did that day.
Dr. McCall?
Annie McCall.
Yes.
And then I sent that peculiar telegram to my mother. Do you remember that one?
Yes, yes. But you see, what's odd to me is, if you go to the front, or if you go to France in the First World War, you'd think you'd be caring for adults.
Yes, that's what I'd thought at first.
But what children were there that needed looking after, that French people
were? Belgian refugee women.
Ah, that's it, I see. So what, they were in hostels or something, weren't they?
But the Quakers set up this hospital for Belgian refugee maternity cases, you see.
Ah, I see. I hadn't realised that. So they really needed...
Oh, they needed midwives. They needed midwives, yes.
Though even so, there must have been plenty of French ones, weren't there? French midwives?
I don't think they had separate midwives. Oh, yes, they did. They were the sage-femme. Yes, but I don't think they had enough. Because, you see, all these refugees were coming in.
Yes.
On top of their normal intake.
Yes, yes.
And they did want extra ones, and that's what they were doing.
Hmm. So, can you just sort of describe to me where you went? You went out to France. Where did you go first?
I went to Switzerland first, because I hadn't got my papers through. And I was doing convalescence cases, I think they were, not midwifery at all, for a few weeks until my passport came through.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that came through, they sent me to Chalon, where the friends were running
a
hospital for refugees from Belgium.
Yes. And did you stay there all through the war?
Oh no, I was only there for about 6 months, I think it was. And then I had to go home because we had an unmarried sister, my mother's, who lived with us, and she was dying, and I had to go home to help.
Really?
My mother. With that.
So how long did that last then?
Before she died, I think about 6 months or five.
And
then what did I do after that? But then I think that was the end of the war, very nearly.
Really? Yes. So you just went over to France for about 6 months? Really?
I think that was all, yes.
Yes. Doing this baby work.
Doing that definitely as a midwife.
Mm. What did you learn in that 6 months? Do you remember it being an important moment in your career?
Yeah, it's a very peculiar story. Because, you see, they didn't think of the English demoiselle understanding them, as my French was very good. I understood all sorts of funny stories I wasn't supposed to. You know why my French was good, do you?
No.
Oh, well, my great-grandfather was a smuggler. And friends rode across country to tell him the customs people were after him, and he had to bolt. He bolted to France. So my grandfather was brought up in France with a first-rate accent, which he bequeathed to my mother, which she passed on to me.
Well. Your mother taught you quite a lot.
Oh yes,
home.
I knew a lot of French before I went to school.
Really? Well, there's something you owe to her.
I did. There was a very nice French woman in France that I knew when I was nursing, and she always called me ma petite française, because they couldn't tell I had a very good accent. I've forgotten it now, but I used to.
So did you come back from France quite well equipped as a midwife, do you think? I mean.
Oh, I think so. I'd had a good deal of practice.
So that really set you up in your future interests.
Yes,
really.
But I didn't. But I got married almost at once after that. I got engaged and married.
Mm. And you found your midwife training quite useful for looking
very
after...
Very useful in all sorts of social work.
Yes. I mean, even for looking after your dying aunt.
Oh, yes. The nursing part of it was quite good.
Hmm. Hmm.
That's a great, because there's a good deal of ordinary hygiene about nursing and that sort of thing, I think you'll learn.
Hmm.
That's come up in all sorts of ways. It's very helpful.
Hmm.
I was on various committees of the, what was then, the Midwife Institute, the College of Midwives. I'm an honorary member now.
I can't remember, you got a sort of paper qualification, did you, before you out to
France? I took the exam.
Yes. What did that involve? What sort of studying did you have to do for that then?
Well, I went and trained in the Clapham Maternity Hospital. You could qualify in 3 months then. But I did have the sense. I took 3 months as a maternity nurse, and then when you practiced under a doctor, and then 3 months as a midwife where you practiced alone. And then you were a fully qualified midwife, which I still am.
So in Clapham there was a sort of, like a school really, was there, for young women?
Well, you went to a maternity hospital and worked in the wards, that's how you learned.
Well, you just picked it up, sort of thing.
And then you had lectures. And Dr. Annie McCall was a pioneer in training, and she used to give us lectures too.
So it was quite a recognised thing for London girls to do, to get
Well, it was very unusual.
Was it really?
And it was especially unusual for any of the educated classes to do it. In fact, there was only one other girl, I think.
Which leads me to ask, you see, why did you want to do it?
Well, I've always been quite dotty about babies. Always. And my mother was too. We used to dream about babies. And if we had a friend who had a baby, we were always visiting her, and I used to borrow babies and take them for walks. I remember once I was wheeling a baby out belonging to a friend. I used to go over and bag her babies and take them out. And a man came up past us, and the baby said, "Dad, Dad, Dad," as he went by, and he said, "No such luck." I didn't think it was funny then. I just told his mother, and she burst out laughing.
But anyway, it starts very early.
Oh, very early. And my mother was just the same.
Really?
She was used to dream about them when she was little.
Really? But she only had two herself, you and your mother.
Yes, she had one who died.
Ah.
There was one who died. And that was because of silly things she did, but nobody knew it was silly in those days. She started in labour, this was her first baby, and she was away at her mother's, I think, and she came back home to have the baby, and she was in labour, and she travelled in a third-class compartment when there were no cushions on the seats or anything. It must have gone like that. And so he was beautifully formed, that he couldn't sit up, he couldn't speak. I don't know if they could have done anything with him. That was my eldest brother. He died when he was six.
Really?
Whether they could have done anything for him now, I don't know.
I can't remember, was the brother who lived, was he younger than you?
Yes, 3 years younger.
So did you sort of, were you rather pleased with him?
Oh, we were great friends. I mean, I really almost looked on him as an older brother when we grew up together. Because he was brilliantly clever and a marvellous athlete. He was supposed to be going to get his blue at Oxford, and he got a scholarship to Balliol. So he was an all-rounder, extremely good-looking. And of course he went out to the war and was killed. Like most of his friends, who were my friends too.
Did that make you feel you wanted to go to France to sort of nurse the soldiers? Well, you didn't go to nurse soldiers,
I just wanted to get away and do something.
Really?
You know, something really in the war.
Yes, it weighed on you, did it? Yes.
I went straight out, but as soon as I felt it was decent to leave the family.
Did your parents try and stop you going at all?
No, they were very good.
Because one often feels with people of your generation that they have all through their lives a feeling of obligation to the people who died in the First War. Harold Macmillan's like that.
Yes, I think you do.
And I wondered whether that is a thing that's hung over you at all, or whether it really got overlain by other things in your life.
I don't think so, no. I think you always feel you owe a lot to them. Because there are a lot of his friends too. We had a marvellous week or two, because when war was declared, he came up. We were in the country, it was vacation. And we came up to the country and there weren't any servants, or we didn't open up the London house by ourselves without any servants. I bought food and fed him and his friends, and some of it went bad, and I didn't know why. And most exciting times.
But I wonder whether your affection for babies, you see, perhaps even started,
oh, it started
with him.
Ago,
I mean, he's the first baby in your life, in a way, isn't he? Your brother.
I was very much, yes. I was six when he was born, weren't I? Yes. No.
Three?
Yes, I was three when he was
three.
Born. That's right, yes. But, though I very soon felt that he was not my younger brother, but my equal, because he was so very, very clever. And he always stood up for me, too.
Did he?
Oh, yes, always. We had a rather... Really? She was really a rather unkind aunt. I think she was an embittered spinster, and she lived with my mother and father. And looking back now, I think they put on her terribly, because she was really just a dog's body in the house. And she adored him. And the consequence was, I don't think she liked me very much. Anyhow, I didn't like her. And I mean, the sort of thing that happened was, I remember we had the schoolroom. We used to do our school lessons in it, you see, in the evening. And it was either preparation time we had. And I was trying to work, and he was playing the fool. He was being very funny, and I couldn't work, and I got very cross with him. And she came in and went for me, sort of bullying him, and why shouldn't he, and all the rest of it. Then after a bit, he got tired of that, and he went up to the drawing room where the family was, taking his school books with him, and he was doing his work up there. And in due course, I finished my prep, and I went up, and I began talking, and she went for me because I was disturbing him while I was working. While he was working. And he went for
really, because, I mean, that's on now. That's, in a way, quite a common attitude now, to be suspicious of anaesthetics.
Yes.
And things like that. But in those days, it was quite an unusual viewpoint.
Well, I got infuriated at the way... You see, they tried, first of all, to get me involved
yes.
in the natural childbirth movement. And I refused to, because I said, what you're doing is frightening young women into fits, because you collect all the horror stories you can, and you publish all the horror stories, and you frighten them into having bad confinements, because you make them tighten up, and they ought to be relaxed and comfortable, and I dislike your movement. I wouldn't ever have anything to do with them. And then they got hold of that idea. And they began to come to me about the... Then I heard of Truby King. Do I mean Truby King?
Yes, I think so.
Or was there somebody
or
else?
Grantly Greed,
that's
yes.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got him to come and see me. I cottoned on to him as soon as I saw an article of his and told him that I was up to it and that I'd had four children without any help. And... Woody and I come and see me, and we got talking quite a lot to him and liked all he said very much. And it sort of got on from there.
There was an actual movement for natural childbirth, wasn't
yes.
there?
Yes.
When was that then? What sort of
Well,
time?
That was his movement, granted it agreed, and it was. Well, I've got his books out there, but I couldn't tell you the date or.
I mean, you'd had your children already before you made contact
before
with Grant Dick Reed. Yes, I see. And he wrote an article. Why did you like it? What was it about what he
said?
Well,
because it was about all these movements for Mrs. One of the Prime Minister's wives.
Mrs. Baldwin, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
She was frightening people into fits with stories of horror confinements and making the women frightened and making them...
Yes.
And why they were having all these awful confinements, because they were fighting against it and tightening up instead of relaxing.
She wasn't in favour of natural childbirth, though, was she? She was in favour of anaesthetics, wasn't she?
Yes, she was in favour, which was, I didn't think was right.
Yes.
I never had any anaesthetics.
Yes, yes, yes. So you then made contact with Dick Reed. What sort of man was he? Was he a trained doctor or what?
He was very nice. He was very pleasant. We had very good conversations and I backed him up. I thought he was right. I thought he was on the right lines.
Was he a trained doctor or what were his qualifications?
He was a doctor. I think he started in Ireland, but I'm not sure. I've got his book somewhere.
Anyway, he was a sort of specialist in child paediatrics, was he? Or
in not frightening women, you see. He was.
Yes.
You see, they're being frightened into anaesthetics. I see that silly Mrs. Baldwin was just frightening women into fits.
Yes, yes.
Putting all the young women off.
I wondered, you see, whether you were critical of doctors. Anyway, I mean, whether it fitted in with the general attitude to doctors.
I didn't mind them.
No,
I didn't have any. I didn't want any.
No.
I was a midwife, and I just preferred a great friend who was a midwife.
Yes. But it's not, you haven't got a general hostility to doctors at all. It's just on this
particular thing. I used to invite the family doctor in to see the baby as soon as he was born. They thought I was dotty, but they got on with me all right.
What did your mother think about you having babies without any help except a midwife?
She was a bit nervous about it at first. She came to help with my first one and fainted all over me just as the baby was born. It wasn't very helpful.
So when you'd had one, it was quite easy and you just went on to have the other three?
The first one was very difficult. And really, my friend who was the midwife looking after me. I think if I'd been anybody else, she would have had got help in. But she knew I should know there was something wrong. But you see, my first baby, I was, well, it was towards the end of the war, you see, and I was very run down, not at all well. My husband was very badly wounded. He'd just come home. And my eldest baby weighed 10.5 pounds, my first, and I did have rather a bad time, but they didn't have any help, just one midwife.
And that was because you believed that a midwife ought to do it?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
I thought they were introducing a tremendous sort of unnecessary interference.
And then after that you got involved with Truby King, didn't you? As well.
Yes, I wrote to him.
Yes, and you were actually promoting his ideas.
And his daughter, when he died, his daughter sent me a copy of my book that he'd annotated.
That's right, yes.
Which I've got.
What, can you explain to me, I don't know about this, what was Truby King's message, really? What was he saying?
Well, he was very, very keen on breastfeeding. And had various theories about how to get more milk and so on. And I got very friendly with his matron, Miss Lydiard, who was a darling. And she ran his clinic in London.
He had a clinic where then?
Somewhere in London, I couldn't tell you where.
Yes, yes.
No.
So was there a sort of movement to promote his ideas?
Yes.
Or? There was a society or anything, I mean...
It didn't get very widespread, I don't think, but there were those of us who were very keen did subscribe, I think, to the propaganda of that sort.
Mm.
Because, have another biscuit, will you?
I'd love one, yes. Will you have another?
Yes, I'll have another.
I wondered, you know, whether
you... see, again, it was fashionable. You see, what annoyed, one thing that infuriated us was that pioneers used to go out to these primitive countries.
Yes.
And the women all thought it was so civilized to have artificial feeding, and it stopped a lot of them doing natural feeding, which they were doing beautifully, you see.
They actually tried to stop the native women.
Yes, they thought it was very civilized and grand, so they had bottles. The babies died, of course.
Did you sort of speak in public about it and
Yes.
sort of agitate, or did you just give money? I mean, did you do
both? No, I did both. I did a certain amount of.
Did you?
Talking about it.
Mm.
Used to take my breastfed babies as an advertisement. The nurse used to sit with them till their feed was due behind. Don't wonder my mother's remark. I told you, I think, that my husband took me to queerer places, queerer times
yes.
than any husband
yes.
she'd ever heard of.
Yes. He was obviously a great help to your father, your husband. I mean, not giving you moral support.
Oh, no, he was a tremendous help.
Mm.
And he was very keen on all the things I was keen on.
Yes, yes. One other thing I want to ask you was about the opposition you faced in the Salford Birth Control Clinic, you know, the Catholic mm-hmm. bishops. Did that worry you? I mean, were you worried by the opposition?
No. I thought it was terribly funny to cutting it about and read them at meetings.
What, the newspaper cuttings, you mean?
Look at all the things they said. Well, here, their letters in the press and things.
So it actually encouraged you, you think, with the criticism?
Well, it did, yes. It was most, because the women used to say, you say, where do you hear the clinic? And they say, we were told not to cut, told about it not to come.
And you weren't discouraged by this criticism?
Not a bit. Mm. It was a marvellous advertisement for us.
Because Mary Stocks had a very good sense of humour anyway,
oh,
didn't
yes.
she? So that, I mean,
oh, she was great fun.
She would take it that way, really, wouldn't
she?
Oh,
yes, I was a great friend of hers. She was at my school.
Yes, yes. So that wasn't why you came together, was
no.
it? Because you wrote to Mary Stokes,
I wrote to Mary
Stokes. She referred you to Mary Stocks.
Yes.
And then you got started.
Mm.
Yes. So really, the Catholic bishops did themselves a disservice by...
Of course they did. Because they had women that we were told in church not to come, and women used to say quite openly.
Weren't they worried about confession and what would happen to them afterwards? I mean...
Apparently not. I don't pretend to understand the Catholic religion or the way people believe in it or don't believe in it.
Because, of course, it turned Mary Stocks away. It made her rather anti-Catholic, didn't it?
I think so.
Behaved. Didn't have that effect on you, though, did it?
A bit. I thought they were a bit funny.
Yes. Mm. Well, she was really quite fervently anti-Catholic.
Oh, yes.
She was Mary.
Really. No, I wasn't. There was a very old friend of my father, of my husband's family, who used to be rightfully worried. He was a Catholic, and he used to come and apologise for me and want me to answer their letters in the press and all the rest of it, and thought they were dreadfully rude.
Mm.
So I didn't mind, it didn't do me any harm. And my husband didn't mind, and all didn't worry me.
Yes. I wondered how you came to join the Manchester and Salford Women Citizens Association.
Well, it was the obvious thing to do if you were living there and doing any public work.
Mm. You mean it was the obvious framework for
oh, yes.
organising women?
Mm.
Mm. Well, what did it do? You see, these societies don't exist now, do they? But did it meet once a week
yes.
or what? I mean,
Yes, we no, not once a week. I don't know how often we met. Once a month, I should think, is more likely.
Mm.
And talked over what we were doing and how one society could help the other. And
so it coordinated?
I think it was called the Council of Social Service or something.
Yes, yes.
Because I remember going to one for the first time after one of those meetings, after I'd been doing a birth control meeting association for a long time, working on it. And then I went to it was a conservative women's meeting they got me to go to. And I did join. And I said, I've been to your society, this is conservative women.
Mm.
I've been to chairs, different organisations all over the town. I only know one of you by sight.
Mm, yes. Yes. You weren't ever involved with the Women's Institutes or the Towns Women's Guilds?
No, the Women's Institute was a country. They weren't for town.
Mm.
The Towns Women's Guilds, I think, were for town. No, I wasn't involved with them. I had quite enough to do.
Yes, I bet you did, yes. Do you remember giving your first speech?
Mm. Yes. It was just after I remember. I'd done a bit at school. I'd spoken at the Literary Society at school when I was there, and one or two things in Oxford, debating societies there. Yes, it was when I was first married, and it was to some local place where we lived. I've forgotten when I was. I was talking about it wasn't birth control then. Yes, I remember that was the first I'd done.
Do you remember being nervous at
yes.
all?
Yes. Until I stood up and it started, then I wasn't.
Mm.
After that, I don't think I was ever nervous at all. Mm. Even in the Albert Hall.
Because mm.
if you're really keen and you know what you're going to say, I don't think you are nervous.
Mm. And anyway, as you say, you had a bit of experience.
Oh, yes.
As a young woman.
And I used to do talks at the... Well, I was always getting up in debates and magistrates' associations and places like that.
Mm-hmm. One great contrast with modern things that comes out in your book is the servants you had. I mean, you just had ever so many servants by modern standards.
Oh, yes, I had 8, I think.
Yes. What do you feel about your situation now? I mean, is it all loss from your point of view, not having any servants now?
No, now I'm getting old, I find it a nuisance having to do things. That's why I'm moving. Partly that and partly because my son used to come once a week. But when I was at home in the country at Goring, I only had a woman, my chauffeur's wife, who used to come in and do an hour or two cleaning every day. She kept the house clean, did all the housework. I did the cooking for the family then. I didn't mind that. I was supposed to be not very well at resting. I'm not allowed to do any public work or anything much.
Mm.
I think I did the Oxford Women Citizens Association or something.
Mm.
I didn't do much.
So you gradually had less and less service.
Yes.
And now you've got none at all.
Yes, but I had more after that, after I came to London, of course.
Did you?
I was chairman of the National Council of Women's Maternity and Child Welfare Committee. That was quite a heavy job.
But did you have servants in London then, first?
No, I didn't. I had a daily woman.
Yes, yes. I wondered, you see, I mean, some people have said to me that they're really glad they don't have servants anymore because they have some privacy now. You know, they aren't constantly feeling there's somebody around looking at what they're doing. You know, do you ever feel that?
No, I never felt that.
Mm.
And I had a daily woman for a long time.
Mm.
when I was in London.
Because it is one of the greatest changes that's happened during your lifetime, the vanishing of domestic service, really, isn't it?
Yes, you see, I've had all sorts. My parents kept two. And when I started off with my husband, I think I had 7 or 8. Then, you see, we did a lot of entertaining. There was a lot to do, and it was a very big house. I think we had 8 bedrooms. And I used to have all of them filled very often with visitors, because it was very hospitable. There was always up to see people. And, of course, I had to have a nurse. At one time I had a nurse and an under-nurse, but not for long. I just had one nurse, and then I had a proper nurse once, you know, trained. I couldn't stand her. She thought she knew more than I did. And anyhow, she probably did, but I didn't like her methods, and I sacked her. And then after that, I always took a girl I'd had as an under-housemaid. And I knew she was clean and honest and reliable, and I taught her.
You were doing them a favour, really, by giving them the experience.
I gave her they got very good jobs afterwards. And I trained her, and she did what I wanted.
But did you like giving the servants their orders? I mean, was it something you handled quite easily?
Oh, yes, it didn't bother me at all.
Because some people, you have arguments and trouble, you know.
I didn't ever, not even when I had 7 men.
Really?
At one time I had 7 men. And that was all right. I remember... I managed them very well, really, because I wasn't very old. I remember one who said he didn't. I used to save myself trouble if I found anything wanted doing. I used to scribble a note. Did I put this in my book? And the man who came and said he didn't like my leaving notes about.
Yes, I think you did. Yes,
I said,
you mentioned.
All right.
That.
I said, next time you're out on your bicycle getting cigarettes, I'll ring for you. And then there was a pause, and I said, "Should I go on writing notes?" And he said, "Yes, please, madam." That was all right.
It sounds a rather grand sort of place, this house you had in Cheshire.
Well, it was
wasn't it?
Quite big. It was 7 or 8 bedrooms.
Yes.
And then, you see, Bill was very hospitable. He very often had 6 or 7 guests.
Really? What sort of people did you tend to entertain? I mean...
Well, his friends, mostly, or mine. Very often I had a mother and 2 or 3 children and husband coming at weekends, and I used to have friends who lived abroad and came while they were looking for a house and that sort of thing. He was very hospitable. We could always have anybody we wanted. And then he used to have friends and bring them in.
So what would you do with the servants? Would you see them all at the beginning of the morning and say, do this and that? Or how would you...
If I wanted to see them, I'd probably stroll around the house and find them. I wasn't very much given to ringing for them.
You give them their instructions at the
beginning of the day. I'd get anything I wanted, but they knew what I wanted. I didn't see all of them every day, necessarily. I had to see them to see if they had rows between them sometimes.
Yes.
And then after my husband died, you see, I had all the gardeners to see to, too. I had 2 or 3 gardeners.
He ran the garden, did he?
Yes, I left that to him. I didn't want to bother with the men. He ran that.
Yes, yes.
But then I had to take it on after he died, you see. Because we've got all our vegetables and things at home. It's much better to keep them on.
You've had very good health on the whole, haven't you?
Very good.
I mean, you had your breakdown in 36, didn't you?
Yes, I had 1 or 2 breakdowns. I had 1 or 2 when I was still at school, because my parents let me do far too much outside work.
Really?
Oh, yes. Extra English classes I had, and extra music, singing at one time. I used to have to... I very often had to go without any tea, because I hadn't time to get any, and go across London for a singing lesson. And I had also, I had 2 or 3 breakdowns when I was at school.
Really?
Sure, overwork, I can see it now. Because I was always working for exams.
When you say breakdown, what do you really mean? I mean...
Oh, a temperature and go to bed for a few days, and the doctor saying I mustn't do any work, I mustn't go to school.
Yes, I see, yes. Because it's a very vague term, isn't it,
yes.
Really, a breakdown.
Well, that's what I used to do.
I mean, it sounds as if your parents were very ambitious for you, really.
They were. They were for both of us. So I took an awful lot of outside exams, like higher local and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And I always got, practically always, I got honours in English and French and German.
Mm. So, in retrospect, do you think they were pushing you too hard?
Yes, I do.
Mm. So it must have got you into good working habits.
Oh, it did. So, I mean, when I went to Oxford, I got quite a lot done.
Mm. Mm. You think your father, as an expert in education, would be more careful?
What, did cobbler's children always have bad shoes? Isn't that a saying?
Yes.
Doctors' wives always say they can't get their husband to look at the children.
Mm. Mm. Yes. What do you feel about your career as a whole? I mean, it seems to me that your career is mainly concerned with, as you say, babies or young children, really, and how to bring them up. And all your interests grow out from that,
yes,
in a way.
That's true.
So that means you hit the women's movement at various points.
Yes.
But you're not in the mainstream.
I'm not in the mainstream, no.
Have you always seen yourself as a feminist, really, or
no,
not? I mean,
not.
You're not a...
I'd always stick up for women and have them on equal terms and all the rest of it, but I would never... I didn't go to war about it.
No.
I always backed them all up. Yes,
yes.
I would never let them down.
Yes. But that's not your main concern.
That's not my main thing.
No.
Only as it comes across my work.
Yes, yes.
You see, since the women got some power, it's been very much better life for women and children, no doubt,
yes,
about that.
Yes. But I'm surprised, you see, you never went into Parliament, for instance. I mean, if you were speaking in public and all that.
Yes, but you see, I was having children for quite a lot of the time.
So was Lady Esther.
Yes, I know, but did she have time to look after her children
properly? Well, I don't know. You probably know more about that than I do, but...
always thought... I was asked to stand once or twice, but I never would. Another thing, I don't honestly think I could have kept awake. That business till 2 or 3 in the morning, I cannot keep awake.
Mm. I'm sure I couldn't, actually.
Could not do it.
When were you asked, Mrs. Frankenberg, to become a candidate?
Sometime when I was up in Salford. I can't
really
remember when, but
mm.
I did. The children were small, and I simply said no, I couldn't possibly.
Mm. Mm.
Although I was very lucky, I had people to look after them. I had a nurse for the little ones, and I had a governess later on.
Mm.
But I never let go of them. I was there.
You wanted to be personally...
decide everything, yes.
Mm.
Mm. But I got on with them very well. I never had any trouble. I used to take an under housemaid. I knew what her habits were.
Yes, yes.
I knew I could cope her.
And in a way, you see, your career seems to me, it's interrupted at a number of points by family concerns.
Yes.
I mean, you said you came back from the war,
yes,
to look after your aunt,
mm,
who was dying.
Yes, to help.
And then you get messed up by Ursula, really, don't you?
Yes.
Acidosis later. And that takes you out of,
yes,
your public life for quite a time. Then you had your breakdown after your husband died.
Yes.
Which meant you had to go carefully for 10 years or so after that.
That's when I started doing a bit of amateurish work in Oxford.
Yes.
With Oxford, British Legion women, that sort of thing.
Yes. So that your career has been rather interrupted by family considerations,
yes,
hasn't it?
I think I've been extremely fortunate because I've had a tremendous amount of variety in,
yes,
all the jobs I've done.
Yes.
They've all been very, very interesting.
Yes. Yes.
And I was frightfully lucky in my husband.
Mm.
He'd always say, yes, my dear, if you want to.
Yes.
It was like he never hindered me at all.
Yes, yes. Do you think you're a good committee woman?
Well, a psychiatrist was cross-examining me once. I think my husband and I had one in for a joke. And she said, are you a leader? I said, I don't know what you mean. She was talking to both of us and she said, are you both the sort of people that get onto a committee and then you get chairman of it? We both giggled and said yes.
And you quite like working with people in a group?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. I work equally well with women or men or...
Because you see, I mean, if one thinks of Mary Stopes, for instance, she's a very different type of person. She couldn't work with anybody, could she, really?
Well, I can. I can work with anybody. There was only one man I really was up against, and I wasn't up against him. He was up against me. And it was when I was chairman of the Offside Women Conservatives in Manchester. And there was a man who was chairman of the men. He couldn't stand me. And I don't know if I put this in the book. I was asked by the Liverpool Birth Control Association to go and address them. And I said to a meeting of my Moss Side Women Conservatives, I hope you won't mind this, I'm not going as a Conservative, I'm not going to have anything to do with you, but I am going entirely independently. And they said, oh yes, that's all right. And then I was told that the men's association for Moss Side was calling a meeting to protest against my going to speak on birth control, really. And one of my women came and told me. And she said, we've all had notices to go to the meeting. And I said, I haven't had one. I was chairman of it. And they said, we thought you hadn't. We thought you'd better know. Are you coming? I said, good God, no. I said, I've not been asked, I'm not coming, nothing to do with me. And he went and there was a unanimous vote. It was a vote of censure on me, you see. And I think it was unanimously against. He didn't get it through. They all came joyously to tell me afterwards. And you know, the next day or two or three days after, he fell dead across the table, just like that. I didn't do it.
A judgment.
Yeah, that's what my women said.
Did you have any direct involvement at the national level with the Family Planning Association?
Oh yes, but they never did very much for me, and I never could make out why. It was really rather funny because the head of it, Margaret Pike, she's quite a friend of mine at Oxford.
Yes, Margaret Sharp, yes.
Yes. And, yes, she was two fishes. She was Margaret Pike and then Margaret.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I was always rather surprised that I wasn't asked to do anything on that. I used to go to the meetings and all the rest of it. But nobody... I asked one or two people if they knew why, and they said, no, they'd all been rather puzzled.
Mm.
But she hadn't.
Mm.
She used to prime me with questions that she wanted asked at a meeting and that sort of thing.
Mm.
But she never asked me to go on the committee or anything like that. Of course I didn't mind.
So you used to go to annual meetings, did you?
Oh yes, I'd got plenty to do, and if there was an interesting speaker I'd go.
Yes, yes.
But I never bothered me if they didn't ask me. That was all right by me, I'd got plenty to do.
Yes. What did you do on the National Council of Women in the 1950s, Mrs. Frankenberg? How did you get involved with that?
I just joined it when I came to London.
Mm.
And I used to go to meetings and behave quite nicely and just sit in meeting. And then once I was going into the Maternity and Child Welfare Committee, I was just a member on it. One of the members rushed up to me afterwards and said, you're going to be made chairman. I said, what? You're going to be made chairman? I said, oh, first I've heard of it. And I was.
Mm.
I didn't know I was going to be. I didn't mind. It was quite a bit of a shock all of a sudden. I wasn't asked beforehand if I'd like it. I did like it. There was quite a lot I wanted to do.
Yes, I was going to ask you, what do you think you achieved in the National Council of Women in the 50s, personally?
Oh, I don't know. It's such a big thing to say what you did.
Mm.
I did an awful lot of talking, of course.
Mm.
And being the chairman of that, I was on the sort of committee, subcommittee. And I wouldn't let myself be put there. Two or three times I was asked to put up the president, and I wouldn't do it.
Mm.
I said, no, if I take that on, I've got to drop everything else.
Mm.
If you're president, you've got to attend most of the committees and go to all the branches. And I said, I should have to drop all the other things I'm doing.
Yes.
I never would
go
on the committee then.
Yes.
But I did quite a lot of talking. So I always do.
So in a way your career sort of goes up and down, doesn't it? You're active some parts of your life, in public life, and less active at other times.
Yes.
It's not a continuous thing like Mary Stocks, for instance, at all.
No, I sort of pause to have a baby, that sort of thing.
I seem
to do that several times.
Yes.
And then Ursula being delicate, I gave a good deal of time to her one time.
What do you feel about getting older? I mean, people must have been asking you this for about 20 years now. But, I mean, do you like getting older?
No, I hate it.
Do you really?
Yes. Especially just lately. I think lately I've had rather a lot of knocks. You see, I've had I had a fall. And then I had this an operation, this thing on my nose. Then I had my son's illness. And I don't know. I think I said to the doctor, I've never felt like this before. He said the anesthetic. I think I told him. And I said, I've never been affected by an anesthetic like that before. And he said, you've never been nearly 90 before. I couldn't contradict that, but I hadn't, you see.
But I mean, in a way, as it seems to me, when you retired, you've got all the time in the world to do what you want.
Yes, but you haven't. I don't know why.
Why not? I mean,
I don't know, because I think for one thing, everything takes 10 times longer than it did. I mean, whereas I could write half a dozen letters in a morning and not think anything of it, it takes me a whole day to write one or two letters. And you see, I was a very good organiser. It means I could get a tremendous amount of work done, but now it takes so long over everything and I forget half the things I want to do. And I just don't get done the things I want to get done. I slow down tremendously.
Yeah.
And I find things a nuisance to do because they take so long. To do.
So you get annoyed with yourself?
Yes, furious.
Do you?
Mm. And I forget things. And I go to a cupboard and stand outside and say, what the hell have I come here for? You know, and I don't know till I go back for it, and then I find what I wanted.
Well, another thing you see seems to me that when you're older, you've got a great length of experience to look back on and think about. I mean, it's interesting
to
think about all these things.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that a bit of a compensation for you? I mean, Don't you think about the past very much? I mean.
No, but it is interesting, and of course I've got a lot of very good friends.
Mm. Mm.
I'm very fond of.
Mm.
And my children are all doing interesting things,
mm.
and I have a good deal to do with them.
Mm.
And as I say, I take such a long time doing it.
You seem to be in quite a lot of demand as well.
Well, yes. Yes, I am really. I'm very lucky, and I think I'm very lucky to have so many interests and so many friends.
What sort of things do you do since you retired? And do you do a lot of reading, a lot of listening to radio?
Silly books. Well, I've got a very interesting one of Mary Stott, which isn't silly. Aging for Beginners.
Oh, yes, that's a good idea, yes. It's good, is it?
Yes, it's quite good.
Because she's a beginner, of course, isn't she?
Yes, so she's much younger than I am. I don't know how old she is.
About 70, 75?
I think she's about that, yes.
Yes.
And I'm in my 90th year now, you see, so I suppose I ought to want to settle down. I like reading silly novels. Well, this, for instance, Grand Hotel, did you ever read it?
Oh, yes, it's a famous book, yes.
Yes, I have read it before, but it's nice and easy reading.
Yes.
You don't have to think when you're reading.
What about television, radio, and things like that?
Yes, I like television.
I mean, you must have a lot of, use the phrase, inner resources, haven't you? I mean, you've got a lot of interest.
Oh, yes, I've got a tremendous lot of interest and a tremendous lot of friends.
So I don't know why you're not completely happy in old age.
Well, because I can't do everything as I used to, and I get tired, you see.
Yes. But then if you get tired, you can go to sleep.
Oh, yes, I do go to sleep. I sleep extremely well. Very often that annoys me because I get sleepy before I want to stop reading. So I've got that to do.
Because it must be annoying not to be able to do the things physically you used to be able to do. That's an irritation.
I mean, it takes me a long time to wash up the breakfast things and that sort of thing. Mm. And I get suddenly very, very tired.
Yes.
And that infuriates me. I suppose it oughtn't. If I think, why can't I do this? Why do I feel like this? And
No, I can understand that.
And I drop things too.
Do you?
Then that means I've either got to risk tripping over them or slipping on them, or get a broom and sweep them up. That's. I think it is time, really, that I went into this hostel. And it's near Ursula and Peter, John's family. And I've got cousins down there, and it's where I used to live in Berkshire, you see.
Do you read the newspapers?
No, don't even take one now.
Really?
I got so cross with them. And it was always something I had to do and didn't want to be bothered with. So I decided, well, listen to the news and that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, you found the news depressing, did you, or what? I mean,
There was such a lot of it.
Yes. Yes.
And it seemed to take up such a lot of time.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so I gradually sort of found I wasn't really reading it and I didn't want to, and I think, oh damn, I haven't read the paper today.
Mm.
And I thought, well, try dropping it. Why bother? So I think I'm limited to the Radio Times and the TV Times now.
What made you write your autobiography?
Well, I had a good many people prodding me to do it, including my own family. And I thought, well, I have got rather a lot of material, and it might be rather fun.
So, what did you do? Did you dictate it into a machine, or did you write it?
No, I wrote it mostly by hand.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
What, from your diaries, or...?
Yes, from my diaries, and various papers and things I had. And some letters I've got. My mother kept all the copies of my letters from Oxford.
Really?
So she used to copy them and send them around to her unfortunate friends, some of them. So there's quite some typescript of my letters from Oxford, you see.
Really?
Quite a lot of those were useful. And then she kept all the copies of my letters from France in the war, so I could look those up.
So you just sat down for a year or so and just wrote it?
Yes, I just wrote them. And when I went to stay with my daughter or Chandra, I just took them with me, and every now and then I wrote a bit and looked them up.
Did you enjoy doing it?
Yes, I did. I got a bit tired of it towards the end and quite ready to finish it.
I was wondering whether you... went over it again several times, or whether you just did one draft and then that
well,
was
no,
it?
I went over it several times. I wrote it longhand and then I typed it.
Did you? You can type, can you?
Well, a typist wouldn't say I could, but it's easier than writing very often.
Yes, yes.
I've got my typewriter handy and every now and then I write some letters.
Mm. Mm.
And certainly it's useful with some things when I want copies.
Yes, yes, of course.
I mean, I have a... I've got a school in Salford, which I'm patron of one of the houses in it.
Yes.
And I had 22 letters from children in the school.
Really?
Hmm. And I write one letter answering the lot.
Yes. Mm.
Generally with stories about my little grandson, which is what they like.
Yes, yes.
That sort of thing.
Mm. You've got a lot of, as you say, a lot of interests.
I've
way
got
or
a
another.
Tremendous lot. And I've got that dispatch case. It's full of enough material for another book.
Is it really? What, on your own life or
yes, additions to what I've done in my own life.
Mm. Mm.
My views on life and the don't so it'll never get written, I don't May when I get down and have nothing else to do.
Yes, and when you're looked after properly.
When I'm looked after and haven't got any bothers, I may start it again.
Mm.
Certainly plenty there.
Because
I have been very lucky and I've had so many things.
Yes, yes, I'm fine.
And I haven't exploited the children. Mm. I think they were all a bit nervous about that. And I said, no, I'm not going to write about you.
Mm.
You know, don't put this in, Mum, don't say this and all this. I'm not going to.
Mm.
Plenty to do without that.
Mm. They thought their indiscretion.
I think they were a bit afraid, yes, they weren't quite sure.
Mm. Mm.
But didn't.
Can you just remind me what your children have done? Of course, your youngest son was killed in the war, wasn't he?
Mm.
John became a lawyer.
Yes. He was a legal advisor to the British Council.
Yes, yes.
And he's made quite a name for himself. Did a lot of travelling.
Mm.
There's a
victory in the Times.
Oh, did you see that?
Yes, I saw that. Yes. Then what about Ursula? What has she done?
Well, she took a degree in I don't know what you call it, looking after horses. And she ran a stables for a long time. She had horses and she gave riding lessons. She's had riding lessons. And then she got married. And she does a good deal of teaching lame children to ride, remedial riding. She does a lot of that now. And of course, she had a husband for 3 years and he died. She's got a little boy, the one who says, don't let Granny make me laugh. That little boy over there.
Oh, yes, yes.
A nice little boy.
Hmm.
There was a funny thing with him the other day. Well, he came to see me. He and his mother were going to escort me to the nursing home when I went in, had this thing. And he spent the afternoon before we went playing with my adapter on my television. And when I came back after I'd been in the nursing home, my Maltese girl, who's away now, who lives here, she said, what did you do with your adapter? We couldn't find it. I said, I left it on my table. She said, well, we think Nicholas must have taken it home. He was playing with it, wasn't he? And I said, yes, I'm sure he didn't take it home. He may have put it somewhere. So next time I telephoned his mother, I said, ask Nicky if he put the adapter anywhere, because we can't find it. She said, yes, of course he did. He put it in the right place. So she said, where is the right place? None of us knew, and apparently there's a place at the back of the television. None of us knew.
I see.
There it was, reposing in the right place.
Goodness.
Nobody had been able to use it.
But you've got a fourth child, haven't you? We've mentioned John, the one who died in the war, and Ursula. There's another one, isn't there? Peter.
John? Yes, Peter, the elder
Tell
boy.
Tell me what he
He lives in Henley. He hasn't got a job. He had a very big house in Oxford and let it. He was in the war, of course, same as John was. And he didn't have a regular job after he came out, but he lived in this house and let it to undergraduates and had a very good life in Oxford. He's got a delightful wife. I'm very fond of him. And he hasn't got any children. And he lives in Henley.
Mm. So he's really rented out property, really.
That's how he's, yes. He made quite a good deal of money by it. He's quite, quite comfortable, quite happy. Comes and sees me quite often. Looks after me very well. So does his wife. She's a darling. And they all look after me pretty well.
Well, let's leave it on that note, shall we? That seems to be a nice one.